morning, Your Honors. I am Bettina Altizer here for the appellants in this case, Juanita Lasley and Tabitha Lasley. Per the record, the facts in this case are pretty, really not in dispute. This involved Tabitha Lasley, who was 8 years old at the time of this incident, who injured herself on the appellee's ATV or all-terrain vehicle. In this particular case, Mr. Hilton, the appellee, was aware of certain warnings on the ATV, namely, never permitted children under 12 to operate this ATV. If you do so, it increases the risk of injury, severe injury, and death. The appellee's conduct, he allowed her to ride this ATV. He assisted her to ride this ATV, provided her a helmet, gave her instructions, showed her where the gas pedal was, the brake pedal was. He had total control and authority over this ATV. He owned it. He had superior knowledge of this ATV. The kicker comes in with the parent. The parent was present. The father was present when Tabitha was allowed to ride the ATV. The father gave permission to Tabitha to ride this ATV. The father, at a trial, the evidence was that the father knew nothing about ATVs. He didn't know how to operate them. He wasn't aware of the instructions, the warnings on this ATV. So that was the evidence at trial. We got through all the way through trial. The defendant moved to strike our evidence. The court sustained that motion and relied entirely on the case of Engle versus Clinchfield Railroad Company, which is a 1937 case. And that's why we're here today. We believe that reliance on Clinchfield was an error. That case does not provide the clear, conclusive proof that plaintiffs, in this case, appellants, did not have a cause of action in this case. Engle is very different from the facts of this case. Engle was a wrongful death case, involved a mom and her three kids walking on the railroad tracks. The train comes, mom hears the train, mom yells for little Louise Engle, who was some feet in front of her. Louise, for whatever reason, when the train comes, little Louise steps in front of the train and is killed. That's not this case, Your Honors. We don't have, in this case, a failure to supervise. We do not have a premises liability case. We do not have a railroad or Mr. Hilton failing to keep his premises safe. We don't have anything. This case is not about property, and it's not about supervision. There were four holdings in the Clinchfield case, none of which are applicable in our case. I can run through them, but number two holding was of particular interest to the trial court in this case, so I'll focus in on that. The trial court, the Engle case, held that because of mom's custody and control of the child, and that there was no conduct on the little girl's part indicating that to the conductor of the train that she would leave the place of safety and go to the track until it was too late, were the reasons for denying the plaintiff's argument in that case. It's basically a foreseeability case. The conductor in that particular case could not anticipate this child just stepping in front of the train as the train was coming. We don't have a foreseeability situation in our particular case. Mr. Hilton was fully apprised, fully aware of these warnings on the ATV, knew that Tabitha was about 8 years old, and knew that if he put her on this ATV and allowed her to ride this ATV, that it risks her of death and severe injury. So we don't have a foreseeability problem. The foreseeability and what could happen was written right on the ATV. So that holding of Engle does not apply. The other four are really not applicable or interesting, I guess. That one is neither, but that's the only one that was interesting. What our court looked to was actually dicta in the Engle case. And on page 140, the sentence that was particularly of interest to Judge Kirksey was one sentence, and I'll read it to the court. If she saw if mom saw no peril in taking them down the pathway, which was 4 feet from the end of the ties, it would be demanding too much of the railroad company to require that it should have, through its agents, foreseen peril in the situation. Again, a foreseeability case, That's particularly not pertinent to our case. We don't have a father who is not managing his child, not supervising his child. Little Tabitha, there was nothing that she did wrong, or she didn't step in front of an ATV. She was allowed by Mr. Hilton to ride the ATV. So the Engle case is not applicable, and certainly does not conclusively show that the appellants had absolutely no cause of action. That's a severe result of applying a case that factually does not support or does not show that the plaintiffs in our case did not have a cause of action.
May I ask you a question?
Yes, sir,
about the duty question in this case? You know, we know that someone who does not have a duty can nonetheless be held liable if they assume the duty. So, for example, you may not have a duty to assist a pedestrian that fell on the street, and leaving statutory possibilities aside, well, that's probably not the best example. But if you don't have the duty and you assume the duty, you may be liable for not doing it correctly. I'm wondering if the converse is true, that if you do have a duty and someone else who's present has more knowledge and more understanding and has a position of authority that's different, can relieve you of that responsibility?
That, I don't know. I don't know, Your Honor, on that particular answer.
Well,
let me put it in
a concrete situation. If someone stopped to help a person who was having a heart attack on the side of the road or whatever, and they assume the duty, and they're going to be doing it incorrectly, and then a medical doctor comes along and says, you know, please step aside, I'm trained, I know how to deal with this. Wouldn't that logically relieve the duty that the other person had?
I think that would. I mean, when you have a doctor on board who's obviously trained to take over the situation, and you're not trained, of course.
Why isn't that the case that we have here?
That's not the case we have here, and I'll
right.
explain why.
Because it seems to me you've got a parent who's interceding, who knows about ATVs, and also knows the daughter.
No, sir, he does not. The evidence at trial was that he had no knowledge whatsoever of the ATV, had never ridden an ATV, did not know the warnings of the ATV, and what we do have is superior knowledge of the owner of the ATV. This is about the ATV, not about the child. We do not have a child who is reckless. You can make argument that reckless and irresponsible, just like little Louise was. She was 4 years old and steps in front of the train. We do not have that situation. We do not have a situation where Tabitha is commandeering the ATV in front of all the adults and off she goes. This is not about Tabitha's conduct. It's about Mr. Hilton's conduct and the superior knowledge that he had about his ATV. First of all, he gave permission knowing that these warnings were in place and knowing that children under 12 should never ride this ATV. And if you allow them, they could be severely injured or die. Now, that's not the father's position. The father says, the father at trial, or the evidence at trial, was that the father was observing all these little kids riding ATVs on the property. His daughter, older daughter, 12 years old, had just ridden the ATV. There was no information imparted to the father, not that I think it would make really ultimately any difference to Mr. Hilton's ultimate responsibility and his duty to exercise ordinary care. But the father was not apprised of any dangers whatsoever of this motor vehicle. He did not have superior knowledge.
So,
counsel, certainly of Tabitha.
In this case, your argument obviously is that Mr. Hilton had both a duty and that he breached it. In this particular case, under these facts, did the father also have a duty which he may have breached?
I think absolutely you could make the argument of that. Where I stumbled as trying this case is the proximate cause issue. Mr. Hilton offered the permission to operate this ATV to Tabitha first. He was one with the superior knowledge. All he had to do was say no. He didn't. He said, yes, go ask your father. Then the father unknowingly says yes.
But if Engle doesn't apply, there's no legal doctrine that would prevent the case from going to the jury and having the jury decide either the proximate cause was Hilton or the proximate cause was the father, or potentially they both. Well, anyway, but your argument is simply we have to get beyond a motion to strike.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. We think that it was absolutely wrongfully taken from the jury, and to rely on Engle was in error. I mean, reading this case, it's just in no way applicable to the facts of this case and does not conclusively establish proof that that plaintiffs in this case had no cause of action.
But, counsel, can you tell me exactly what the duty is in this case? Because I think you said it's not premises liability, it's not about supervision, it's not about the transfer of the parental supervision, it's not the assumption of the duty. So what duty is it?
Very clearly and very simply, Mr. Hilton had the duty to exercise ordinary care. It's very that simple based on our negligence law. He doesn't, the father cannot, by his presence, immunize Mr. Hilton from his ordinary common law duty of ordinary care.
And that's because they were social, he was a social host, these were social guests.
I really don't think that makes any difference. This could have occurred at a park or a church parking lot or any place. I don't think the guest or the fact that's getting into premises liability and land and defects in the land, I don't think that's applicable at all. It's his duty to exercise and follow the warnings which he
Here's the dilemma with that. Suppose the question had been asked of a stranger, and a little girl said, "Can I ride this?" And she said, "Sure." So there must be some duty that you're relying upon that has to do with the relationship with the father.
No, sir, I'm not.
Well, and then what duty would a stranger have?
Well, the stranger, does the stranger own the ATV? Does the stranger know the warnings of the ATV? Does the stranger have power to say who can ride the ATV and who could not ride the ATV?
Well, but I mean, I hope I would never be this callous, but if some child came to me and said, "Can I ride the ATV?" I said, "It's all right with me." Are they liable?
It depends on the knowledge and the control and the ownership of that ATV.
Well, it depends on the duty.
Also depend on the relationship. By being the owner of the ATV and hosting this party, you've put yourself in a relationship with the people to where you owe a duty to them. The stranger wouldn't owe a duty because he's a stranger. He didn't put himself into a relationship with anybody.
I think that the case law, or at least the basic common law, is that if you place a person at risk for harm, then that invokes the duty of ordinary care. And that's what we're saying, is that Mr. Hilton placed this child in harm's way, created the danger for this child by his permission and allowing her to ride the ATV with all of the knowledge that he had. And that is an absolute independent duty to exercise ordinary care. We don't have a stranger situation. We do have a relationship with the ATV and his ownership and whatever that brings. So I think it's not necessarily the relationship of an individual to a child. It's his overall duty to exercise ordinary care and not place anyone in harm's way and create that danger.
Well, let's see. We have to get this straight, because this whole case may very well depend on the duty. I mean, it's a focus. Right? If the stranger doesn't have the duty and the father does, because there's a relationship, and you're pursuing the owner of the ATV, who happens to be the social invitee, presumably these guests. But you tend to suggest to Justice McClanahan that wasn't the basis for any duty. As a stranger, I don't have one. As a father, you may have one. Where's the source of the duty for the owner of the ATV? Just tell me where it is. It can't be some just general ordinary care. It has to come from somewhere. Where does it come from?
Well, it comes from placing someone in harm's way. That's where it comes from. It's the idea of placing somebody in danger and not exercising ordinary care, which we all have. I mean, it is. I cannot place anyone in this courtroom in danger. I've got to exercise ordinary care.
But see, the stranger analysis that I gave you, if the child asked me, "Can I ride this ATV?" It's fine with me. That comes under your definition of nobody gets to put the child in a situation of peril because of ordinary care. Well, what I'm trying to figure out, and I'm not saying you don't have one, I'm just trying to get you to articulate what it is. What is Mr. Hilton's duty? Where does it come from?
It comes from his ownership of the ATV and his knowledge of the ATV. That's where it comes from. His superior knowledge of the situation, his knowledge of the danger of the situation, and knowing that this child is under eight years old. And if it's a relationship issue, I think it's a knowledge and conduct issue. I guess I'm not leaping over into the relationship issue. I'm focusing in on his conduct and his knowledge about the ATV, and then placing this child in harm's way. I'm not a child.
Chief Mayor?
I guess I have a question, too.
I have one, too.
Why are you hesitant to say that there was a relationship created by Mr. Hilton inviting these people over to his house and having an ATV there that children can ride?
I guess I'm not really hesitant to say that. Maybe I am. I'm trying to work that out. I don't want it to be a land issue. And I'm afraid that if we get into a discussion and invitee and licensee, just like the Engel case, that refocuses something that's not part of this case. And the land issue and inviting people over and then providing a dangerous, in this case,
right.
Tabitha, a dangerous motor vehicle,
that's where
his responsibility begins and ends, as far as I'm concerned. So.
But that doesn't have anything to do with ownership of the land. I mean,
no, sir. No.
Wouldn't it be the same thing if he invited everybody over to the public park, and I'm going to have ATVs there for everybody to ride?
It certainly would.
Chief, may I ask a question? Why? I don't. Assuming Mr. Hilton has a duty of ordinary care, why wouldn't the parent's duty be superior to that of Mr. Hilton and, in essence, supplant it or override it?
In this case, it could not be, only because the father did not have the superior knowledge of the ATV. Engel focused in on the child, which was appropriate in that case, but our case is focused in on the ATV. This is a man, an owner, who had the owner's manual, who bought this for his own child, who was apprised of all the warnings, knew that Tabitha was eight years old.
Does the parent have some duty to inform themselves before they say, well, if he says it's okay, go ahead and ride?
I certainly make that argument, but my argument is that that does not relieve Mr. Hilton of his responsibility and his duty to exercise ordinary
care. So in response to Justice Powell's question, that hypothetical could in fact be correct, that the father's duty was higher, but that would be a jury question, not a motion to strike question.
Yes, Your Honor. And also, what we argued in our brief is, what about Tabitha and her rights? And our point here is that no one has the right to place a child in the harm, and Mr. Wilson doesn't, and neither does the parent. So I would agree with the justice that to say that the parent certainly has responsibility to look after the child, but in this particular fact scenario, he was grossly uninformed and did not have the ability, if you will, to make prudent choices for his child.
So your position is that, and I go back to the stranger, because I like Justice Goodwin, I can't figure out why you're reluctant to focus on the unique circumstances of the ownership of the ATM, of the ATV, rather. But having said that, the stranger who says, it's okay with me, if they happen to have extensive knowledge of ATVs from their trips out west and raising their own children, they're liable. And the stranger who is ignorant and says, it's okay with me, is liable. The one who's ignorant and says, fine with me, can I ride this? Okay, fine with me. He doesn't know anything about ATVs. He's not liable. The one who is just a stranger but does know something about it, even though he's a stranger, under your theory, they would be liable.
Justice, I think I did not make myself perfectly clear on the ownership. I think there is a tremendously unique responsibility for Mr. Hilton because he owns the ATV and knows about the ATV. That's why I said I think it's a relationship with the ATV, the motor vehicle, versus an individual like a parent, child, or social guest and a host and a guest. So I think because of Mr. Hilton's ownership and therefore control, his control, and this is what was at trial, was that he had the exclusive, absolute authority to say who could ride this ATV and who could not. So that relationship is there with the ATV, and he should have, instead of placing his child.
I think you've answered Justice Lemon's question.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the extra time. I'm sorry for taking the question.
Well, Ms. Mundy, we'll start out at 15 minutes and see where we end up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel?
Yes.
Can I just go straight into the duty question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because we understand.
Why don't you let her announce her name first?
Because we all know her.
My co-counsel, Pete Ira, who clearly is the tallest guy in the courtroom today, but we both
you
represent
Daniel. Stand up.
Okay. It seems clear from our questions that we've moved beyond Engel as a bar. And
right.
We are into what is the duty or is there a duty. Your opposing counsel did not bring to our attention the case of Bradshaw v. Mentor, but I'm presuming that you're quite familiar with that case.
I am familiar with the case, although I don't believe that it applies here, but yes.
Let me run through the facts, because I want you to tell me, other than the fact that in Bradshaw v. Mentor, Ms. Bradshaw was an adult,
right.
I'd like for you to walk through why the duty that this court clearly found there
yes.
doesn't apply here. Okay.
Yes.
It was invitees
mm-hmm.
to the mentor's house for a similar event to what we had here. Either Ms. Bradshaw said, "I want to ride the horse," or she, or Mr. Mentor said, "Would you like to ride the horse?" The horse, known as Buckshot, was highly spirited, liked to run, was skittish, was nervous, and on at least one occasion had run away when the reins were lifted. Ms. Bradshaw did not know any of that. She got on the horse ran away, she was seriously injured. This court relied upon several different doctrines relating to duty. First of all, the court noted that she was a social guest. The court noted that there is a general duty to social guests. The court then made a distinction between passive negligence, i.e., the horse is just kind of hanging out, she gets on, Mr. Minter's not really aware of it, and active negligence, where he either invited her to, or when she asked, he said, "Oh, absolutely, get on." And the court then said it was for the jury to say whether the defendant was guilty of ordinary negligence in inviting or permitting. This court did not come to the conclusion about which of those two facts was present. Inviting or permitting her to ride this horse without first ascertaining whether she was an experienced and capable rider, without warning her of the characteristics and propensities of the animal and the dangers incident to the situation. Now, I'll just say, that appears to be on all fours with this case, with the sole exception that she was an adult and that here we're dealing with a child, and that she had no other responsible party who would have stepped in and said, "Oh no, don't do it." Walk me through if there's any other distinctions than that.
There are some important distinctions, Your Honor. And first of all, it's difficult in this case because the plaintiff has disavowed the social host theory of liability and any premises liability. But with that said, the most important difference between Bradshaw and this case, aside from the absence of the parent, is that these were latent defects. These are essentially latent defects. What the court said was that a social host liability to a licensee under those circumstances is to exercise reasonable care for his affirmative acts of negligence and reasonable care with regard to basically latent defects, defects that a plaintiff is not going to know about. The affirmative acts there were not revealing the dangerous propensities of the horse. That is not the situation that we have here. The difference, and there's another important difference, which is the duty that was alleged to be breached in Bradshaw, which is you didn't tell me about the dangerous propensities of the horse. You didn't ask about my experience in riding horse. Those actually were breached. There was evidence that they were breached. There was absolutely no evidence in this case. Let me focus just on the affirmative acts of negligence, because that was the source of the source of the duty was the social host, and then it was the affirmative acts of negligence. There is absolutely no evidence in this case that the defendant affirmatively did in making a helmet available and in providing her instructions were negligent. There is no evidence at all that he breached those duties. So when you assume a duty, the duty that you assume is to perform those affirmative acts reasonably.
Okay, now, but the facts do show that he knew that there was a warning that you can't ride it if you're under 12, and that he knew she was about 8 years old. Does that not supersede the...
It does not, Your Honor, and that goes to the distinction.
Does it not make it a jury question?
It does not. And again, we're talking about duty, but the breach and causation are also relevant too. But it was open and obvious. The hazards and risks associated. Yeah, they were. Well, the 12-year-old saw the sign right there, Your Honor. They were obviously posted there. But the difference in this case, when we're talking
about the 12-year-old being the
supervision,
sister, the sister.
Yes, correct.
But the sister's not the plaintiff here.
But, Your Honor, the facts in this case is that the defendant inquired of the father, can she ride this? He gave his permission to ride. And then the undisputed evidence is, and Tabitha confirms this, and then the defendant says, are you sure? And the father says, yes, I think she can handle it.
Okay. Now, would you agree, or am I incorrect, that based upon either these facts or somewhat similar facts, that it's possible for both the father and the host to be negligent?
I agree with that.
Okay.
I agree with that. And again, this is a difficult position for me to be in because of the disavowal of a number of these things. It's not a negligent entrustment case. It's not a premises case. Apparently, the social host liability, and the reason is because they feel that you're going to fall into the recreational use immunity statute. That's why they are not alleging those. So let me start with what I think I heard. I think I heard that it is solely the ownership, the defendant's ownership, and control and knowledge of the ATV that creates the duty. They have not cited one case for that proposition. Not one. And we also know that as it relates to Bradshaw and the claims of active negligence, that even if this court thinks there is some duty, none of the things that he is alleged to have done, making the helmet available, providing instructions on the vehicle, were negligent. They don't allege that it was improper. They don't allege a defect in the helmet. They don't allege that the instructions that they gave her were improper. They could have done that.
Okay, no, counsel,
that was not the case.
I am aware of a specific disavowal that this is a premises case. The plaintiff said, do not treat this as premises liability, and I understand exactly why.
Yes.
Plaintiff would disavow that, because at that point you do get into the recreational immunity statute. Can you show me a specific disavowal that this is a social host case, that we should not be, a specific disavowal that we cannot or should not analyze this under social host liability?
Your Honor, I thought I heard it today in oral argument, but I think we can win and do win even if social host liability applies. And again, as I understand Bradshaw and Virginia law on duties to licensees by social hosts, it is reasonable care for your affirmative acts, and it is reasonable care for latent defects, such as, you know, not knowing the horse's propensities.
Would a defect that is obvious to an adult be latent to an 8-year-old?
It's possible, Your Honor, but again, the father's presence does change the court's analysis in this case. And if I can, let me turn to that for one moment, because I do believe...
For a motion to strike?
Well,
I can understand
because there
sure.
are two different... As I heard, although I think I also heard a disavowal today of this being a claim of supervision. But as I thought I understood that the plaintiff's claims were this. Two buckets. One, failure to supervise. And when I say failure to supervise, that means... You gave permission to ride. You allowed her to ride, and you didn't override the father's permission. The second bucket is the affirmative acts that he did. Up until today, I thought those were the two buckets we're dealing with, and I've talked about the affirmative acts. Duty of supervision. The duty of supervision is you didn't override the father. You didn't assume, because it was your property, you should have just said to her, no, you can't ride it. And what the rule we are asking this court to apply is a rule that Virginia has not had occasion to consider yet. It is that social hosts do not have a duty to supervise or warn child guests of obvious hazards when the parent is present and knows or should know of the obvious hazard. Now, this is entirely consistent with Virginia law. It dovetails very nicely with the Kellerman case. It's almost the prequel to Kellerman, essentially. It's what happens, because Kellerman is what happens when the parent relinquishes the care. There's a transfer of the care. They don't even allege that's happened. Here we have when the parent has not relinquished the care. And not only that, it's not just the parent was present. The parent was actively supervising the child. He gave his express permission. He observed her at all times. He told her to stop once she started swerving. He ran to her when she crashed. He wasn't off drunk. A lot of the cases we cited, the parents were nowhere to be found when children were drowning in pools, and yet those courts still held no duty of supervision.
Counsel, I actually don't see her making an argument about that the father, with regard to supervision. On page 15 of her brief, it says, Appellee's permission and active conduct was independent from any permission, supervision, or conduct of Tabitha and her and or her father.
It's the permission, Your Honor. I think that when you say, when the father is present and says, I give permission for her to do it, and I think she can handle it, and the risks of that activity are obvious. The warning is there. The risks are obvious. It's as obvious
to the father.
It is, Your Honor.
But it's not obvious to an 8-year-old.
But that's because he understands his child. And what will happen if we adopt the plaintiff's rule, what will happen is that not only will social hosts have a duty for, you know, whether children are enabled to engage in all sorts of activities on their property.
It's not a matter of being unable to. It's a matter of actively assisting when you know that it's dangerous.
But, Your Honor, it was the father that put her on the ATV. The only assistance that he provided was in saying that she could do it if her father gave permission. That's the active assistance claim. That's it.
He showed her how to do it.
Correct, Your Honor, but that's also not alleged to have been negligent. So even if this court believes, and I want to be clear about this, even if the court believes that somehow gave a duty, this court can decide as a matter of law that duty was not breached and was not a cause of the accident, because there's not a shred of evidence that assistance caused her harm. Rather, what they're saying is you should have never let her ride it in the first place. That's the claim. That's really what they're saying. And that, again, is...
Counsel, is your argument that there was no duty on the part of Mr. Hilton at all, or that Mr. Hilton's duty as it existed was overridden by the father's supervision?
Your Honor, it's not really either, maybe.
Neither?
Let me...
Okay.
Yeah, I think it is, number one, that he did not have a duty at all to supervise or as it regards to whether she could ride the ATV, because the child was being actively supervised by the parent and it related to an obvious risk. Same kind of risk as a swimming pool, a playground, anything. My second argument is that even if the court believes that he did have a duty by virtue of something that he did, or the court views it as a latent defect, nothing that he did to assist her was negligent or caused her injuries. And therefore, this court can decide as a matter of law that even if there was a duty, it was not breached or it could not have been a proximate cause of the accident. That's our position. And then, of course, we have the backup argument on recreational use immunity and gross negligence if the court gets past the duty issue.
Ms. Bundy, the summertime has just passed, and everybody has recent memories of being at swimming pools. And it seems to me that what you're saying, although you haven't been as blunt as I'm about to be, is that if the position of the plaintiff is right, a homeowner that has a swimming pool is never, ever going to allow the child of someone else, a six-year-old or whatever, even if they're supervised, to get in that pool.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the whole point of the rule that we're asking the court to recognize is that it's consistent with social expectations. If a child comes to my house accompanied by a parent, I'm going to assume that that parent is going to be responsible for general supervision of the child. If the parent is not present, like in Kellerman, I know my duty is greater. I know that I have a duty, and I have a duty, whatever the duty is I assumed, provided that the parent relinquished that duty to me. But if we adopt the rule that the plaintiffs suggest, not only will social hosts have a responsibility to take care of kids and probably won't invite them over at all, but also they'll be responsible for policing the negligence of the other parents.
Could I ask you a question, counsel? No, I hate to interrupt you, but we're running out of time. I think you two are at odds because, as I understood the opposing counsel, she said that the father, there was plenty of evidence that the father did not know about the dangerous propensity of the ATV. And then your test is he knew or should have known. What evidence is there that he knew or should have known about the danger of the ATV?
Your Honor, because he had had a brain injury by the time we got to trial, he couldn't even remember the event. We have to go by what the evidence was at the time. And I believe that evidence is that he had an opportunity to observe both his older daughter and other children, younger children, riding the ATV. The notice, the warning that is the crux of the plaintiff's case was in open view, and in fact his 12-year-old daughter saw it, and he also knew the propensities and strengths and weaknesses of his own child. The defendant, based upon the conversation that he had with the parent, assumed that the parent knew whether it was safe or not for the child to ride.
Would that be a jury issue then, though?
And again, the duty has got to be the legal issue. It's whether you breached it.
Well, but you're talking about the breach, because if you knew or should have known, that's talking about breach, isn't it?
Well, yes and no.
Well, they all kind of put together,
but,
I guess.
Yeah, but it really goes more to, I think the rule, the parental supervision rule that we're talking about really goes to obvious versus latent defects. And I think that's where the know or should have known comes in. And so the other courts have held, the hazards of a swimming pool are to adults, sure, and children are obvious. Okay. I think the hazards of an ATV are open and obvious to, both to parents and children. A playground, what boys can do on a playground. I mean, it's those are all open and obvious things. It's reasonable for a parent to defer to a parent for those particular decisions.
Would this case then rise or fall on the theory that riding an ATV is open and obvious?
It does not necessarily, Your Honor, because of there was no negligently performed affirmative act.
Can you say again what you say that the duty that we've not announced before that you think we should in this particular instance?
Your Honor, that a social duty. Correct. That
a
social host does not have a duty to supervise or warn child guests of obvious hazards when the parent is present and knows or should have known of the obvious hazard. And again, an obvious hazard you're going to know or should have known. And if I can, I know my time is up, but the limitations to that rule would be that even in this case, it's not just the parent was present, he was actively supervising. This was open, and we're not talking about immunizing a social host from their own acts of negligence.
And what courts have found that duty?
Your Honor, it's in our brief. There are a number of courts, including, I believe,
that have found. I'm familiar with the brief. I'm familiar,
yes,
with all the cases that you cited from Alabama, Arkansas, Indiana,
Georgia,
Illinois, California, etc. Is that the precise duty in those cases? I did not read that as being that.
That was the precise duty in the case. We think we have even a stronger case here because of the actual
in our case, we have
active supervision by the parent, not just a parent who'd have wandered off to take a phone call.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we'll take a short recess.
All right.